Hi, with Truth News Radio Australia, broadcasting to you on the 1st of May 2013. My name's Hereward Fenton. Welcome to another show, ladies and gentlemen. Well, today's show, we're going to lead with some disturbing Australian news. Despite the various claims that the government was doing extremely well with the economy and various measures to generate revenue to pay for tax cuts, such as the carbon tax, it turns out that, in fact, there hasn't been enough revenue generated, and the Australian economy is looking like it's in big trouble with an enormous budget deficit. And I'm going to play to you, firstly, a clip of our Prime Minister, Julia Gillard, discussing the situation. And then I want to play you an interesting little talk by Stefan Molyneux from Freedom Main Radio, who's actually talking about how the situation in Australia is caused by statism, which he likens to a type of cancer, which basically slowly eats away at a country and eventually destroys it from within. So let me just kick off here with the recent press statement here by Julia Gillard from a couple of days ago. I think it was on the 29th of April 2013.
The amount of tax revenue the government has collected so far this financial year is already $7.5 billion less than was forecast last October. Treasury now estimates that this reduction will increase to around $12 billion by the end of the financial year. This unusually low revenue, which wasn't forecast even a few months ago, creates a significant fiscal gap over the budget period. Put simply, spending is controlled, but the amount of tax money coming to the government is growing much slower than expected. Necessary investments are affordable if we make smart decisions. So the way we proceed with these investments is to fund new structural spending with new structural savings. But because we are now confronted with new facts and far more significant reductions in tax money than was expected, we are going through the process now of making decisions to spend less in some areas than we had hoped, to raise more in revenue in some areas than we had planned.
Now, what's interesting about that is if you look back at the history of the past few years of our government, there has been a huge amount of spending. I mean, there has been, well, they called it stimulus spending. In the wake of the 2008 global economic crisis, the government spent massive amounts of money. And so the claims here that the government is not overspending, well, I guess we're looking at the last year or two maybe. We're certainly not looking at the amount of spending that was done, but that was actually a monetary policy done specifically with the idea that it would get us out of the economic doldrums. Now, another interesting side to this is that with the carbon tax, which was actually a revenue-raising mechanism, other tax cuts were also brought in. So in order to compensate people for the amount of increased costs due to electricity going up, the government was offering tax breaks to a number of different segments of the community. And the government is now saying that they will not be able to maintain some of those tax breaks, or perhaps they're going to cut back on some of the cuts. Sorry, this is a little convoluted, but I think you understand what I mean. So what is the real problem here? Well, according to Stefan Molyneux, host of Freedom Main Radio, the whole problem is caused by the cancer of statism, which basically, I'll let him explain it in his own words. He's very articulate, and he's actually put a little talk together here specifically on Australia, so looking at the Australian situation and what has caused us to be heading into an economic collapse scenario. So I will now play to you the clip here from a recent broadcast from Stefan Molyneux.
So You may hear a little bit about the Australian economy in the news. It's considered to be a proto-Scandinavian economy. It's doing well. There may be some problems here or there, but you don't hear much about those. You might hear some monthly low in an obscure manufacturing performance index, maybe a graph or statistic on income inequality, but you don't hear about the reality of the cancer statism and its effects upon the Australian economy. You know, one of the great and terrible things that happens when you study philosophy, reason, economics, and ethics is you understand, finally, that immorality is like physics. When state power, when state predation, when counterfeiting through central banking, when increasingly selling off the unborn to foreign banksters through the form of national debts, wherever that shows up, you get the same plague, you get the same destruction. It is not magic. There's no place in the world where if you drop a rock, it falls up. And there's no place in the world where the state expands and things get progressively better over the long run. It's the same plague that is devouring Europe and has obliterated the wealth of the middle class in the United States. And wherever you see statism appearing to be sustaining, you know, it's like that, you know, maybe you've got some neighbor next door who spends all summer with his feet up by the pool reading Daniel Steele novels, and you're like, whoa, why am I working for a living? That guy's doing great. But he's just piling up debt, which is going to collapse. So the governments of the West are eating up the future in order to bribe the dependent remnants of what was once a once proud culture.
I'll just pause it there. Now, I'd just like to reflect on that from my own personal experience in Australia over the past few years. And what we saw in 2008, as I mentioned earlier, was a vast government spending frenzy. There were stimulus programs set up. The government put money into all kinds of internal projects, council developments, and of course some of them are quite infamous, such as the home insulation scheme, which spent hundreds of millions of dollars and indeed caused the death of a number of people in house fires. And this whole home insulation scheme, as well as being part of the Kyoto Agenda 21 scheme of reducing energy consumption, was also a means of stimulating the economy. And the government thought it was a great thing. You know, the government thought, well, this is a great way to lift the economy. And but in reality, what they're doing with this type of activity is simply printing money. The government is actually just creating jobs that it creates and then paying for them, right? So it is actually directly creating revenue, but it's not as a product of a true market need. You know, there was no market demand for the home insulation scheme. It was simply decided from above, from central planning, that this would be a good thing. And indeed, it did put a lot of money through the economy, but because it wasn't on a solid foundation, indeed, even technically, even in terms of the way it was organized, it wasn't on a solid foundation, the whole thing collapsed. Let me just return you now to Stefan Molyneux, where he's going to run through some of those details, indeed, that take place when you have a statist cancer taking over a country.
So let's look at government debt, the crushed middle class, and the terrible realities of the future of Australia. It makes the chrysalids look good, I suppose. So government debt to GDP. Now, for those of you who were used to, like, Greek-style numbers of over 100% and Japanese-style numbers of close to 200 or over 200%, this all looks not so horrendous, but of course the reality is it's gone up hugely during the recent recession, and anything you see in the future is all lies. I mean, you know, like in America, if they calculated the unemployment rate the way that they did in 1982, it would be over 20%. If they calculated inflation the way they did in 1982, it would be over 10%. So this is all, you know, when you see it go down here, it's, they just assume that there's going to be cuts or that there's going to be increased revenue. It's all just made up nonsense. But it's definitely heading the wrong way. So the public debt is, I guess, close to $400 billion. The population is a little over 22 million. And so the public debt per person is over $17,000. Number of employed, 11.5 million. So the public debt per employee is over $34,000. And that's not good. So what happens when the welfare state comes in, what happens when the welfare warfare state comes in particular, is governments print money. And in order to avoid the consequences of printing that money, which is that they're so heavily in debt that like a 1 or 2 point increase in the interest rates would wipe them out of the financial universe completely, they crush down interest rates incredibly low, which discourages savings, thus eating the future. If you don't save, you can't invest in capital improvements and capital equipment to improve your worker productivity. So the governments crush down interest on the debt in the same way you'd love to get your visa debt interest down to 1% or 2%. Governments crush it down using the power of central banking.
I'll just pause it there again. I think I may have a question there for Stéphane Molyneux, because I think that Australian interest rates are actually higher than the US and higher than a number of other countries, which in fact does make Australia an attractive place for people to invest in. So the point he's making there about crushing down of interest rates certainly applies to the US. I'm not sure whether it does apply to Australia to such a degree as Stéphane Molyneux would have us believe there. But the point about printing money, I think, is extremely valid. So let me just continue here, and I'll play a little more from the clip, and then we'll be going to break shortly.
Monopoly power of central banking, the violence, counterfeiting of central banking, they crush down the interest rates, which drives people to stop saving and start spending, and drives housing bubbles and all other kinds of bubbles all over the place. So, of course, you're getting a huge amount of debt. Also, as which we're really seeing now, the governments really began in the 1960s here. You can see the same pattern. They began to do huge amounts of bribery, bribery in the general population, buying votes through the provision of freebies. And what happens is they then, of course, print money. They crush down the interest rates. People stop investing in capital equipment. There's less money available for entrepreneurs. So what happens is, and it's really quite tragic, what happens is your real wages begin to decline. And this has been catastrophic in the U.S. And what happens when the real wages begin to decline? Well, by golly, people just borrow to make up the difference in the hopes that somehow things are just going to turn around. You know, like the half, it's like watching the movie Titanic over and over again. And like, this time, it's going to be different. This time, I'm betting on Leo and Kate both making it out alive. No one here gets out alive. Increasing poverty rate. A recent study conducted by the University of New South Wales in collaboration with the Aussie School of Social Services, ACOSS, demonstrated that 21% of Australian adults and over 26% of children live below the poverty line.
Now, I can certainly vouch for the fact that real wages have declined, and I've seen this over the last 10 years to an alarming degree. So I think Stéphane is spot on there, and indeed the increasing poverty is quite evident in large cities like Sydney. It's one wonders where the country is headed, and will the election and a change of government change it? Possibly, but only time will tell. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We're just heading to break, and I'll be right back with more news. Do stay with us. Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
Seems to me like they want us to be afraid, man. Or maybe we just like being afraid. At this point, that it's just a part of us, part of our culture. Security alert on orange. It's been on orange since 01, G. I mean, what's up, man? Can a brother get yellow, man? Just for like 2 months or something? Goddamn. Sick of that. Mic check. The groove is thick, so I'ma rhyme like a lunatic. I do this shit with an unassuming wit. The corporation conjured up the bass and the tempo. My name is Liv, that's the intro, now let's go. The flow of life throwing strife into the mix.
Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. It's great to have your company today. Whether you're listening to us on podcast or whether you're in your car in Austin or Oklahoma City or wherever you may be, you're most welcome to join us and give us any feedback you've got. Been talking there in the last segment about the Australian economy, and it's certainly been flagged from the Commander-in-Chief, Julia Gillard, that we've got some problems. And then I discovered this interesting little talk by Stefan Molyneux, which I played a little bit of previously. And now I have on the line Josh Jackson joining us from Germany. And Josh, you I believe, posted that clip there by Stefan Molyneux on our Truth News page earlier today.
Yeah, I think a couple of days ago, but it's definitely very telling, and he pulls up some fantastic statistics. And why I think it's important for our American friends as well is that you can see a definite correlation, and in fact, see a definite correlation worldwide. I mean, this is the problem with the paradigm that we're in, is that politicians basically always want to promise more stuff. You know, they promise better this, better that, better hospitals, better policing, better roads, better yada, 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 more jobs, more jobs, more jobs.
Yeah.
Now, if the politician that he's running against says, I'm here to, you know, cut, he's not going to get elected. So who's going to get elected? The guy or girl, the woman that promises a whole heap of things. And once, of course, once you promise them, you can't really take them back. What I mean by that is once you've actually spent the money,
yeah,
and employed a whole heap of people, you can't then, you know, fire them, because then you'll be even in worse strife. So year after year, they hire more people. The government gets bigger and bigger in terms of services, which then become unfunded liabilities, really, because at the end of the day, that the government doesn't earn anything. The government doesn't actually make any money. It just takes money from the working class and the entrepreneurs and the people that are actually creating. And so you end up in this case where year after year it gets bigger and bigger, and you really can't do anything more than a country that just keeps on taking and taking and taking more. Yeah. Eventually, the capital leaves the country and goes to more countries that are cheaper, like Asian countries, for instance, at the moment. It has been for a long time, actually. And it's sort of left.
But then you get this decline in real wages, as Stefan Molyneux pointed out. Now, I actually noted in the previous section there that, well, first of all, let me just recapitulate what Julia Gillard said in her press conference. She said, well, we've looked at our figures and the government hasn't been overspending. Now, that to me is the most ridiculous statement I've ever heard, because I know, and I lived through it, and so did you, in the wake of the 2008 global crisis, the government did nothing but spend. That was their solution. And I believe that's called the monetarist or Keynesian approach to the economy. The government kept spending. They called it stimulus spending. There were massive programs, and I know there's quite a few of them.
But
one of them that particularly rings in my mind is the home insulation scheme. You remember that one?
Yeah. Every house, for our American friends once again, and the other friends around the world, every house in Australia was given almost free, like very, very cheap insulation. And we had these cowboy companies all of a sudden arise out of nowhere saying, yeah, we're insulation specialists, and installing these sort of pig bats and these sort of roof insulation to keep the heat out. And would, you know, houses would burn down because they'd, you know, cover insulation across electrical wiring, and it was just a total mess. And we had, you know, if someone died, I think we even had some deaths because of the house was burning down.
Indeed.
And it was a total disaster. Another amazing stimulus was school halls. All of a sudden, every school was promised a hall, and there was schools that had perfectly good halls, didn't want another hall, didn't need need another hall, needed computers, needed other stuff. But no, they got a hall. So now they're sitting with two halls and a hall.
So this is just a way of a government magically conjuring up money, isn't it? This is actually what, when Stefan Molyneux says printing money, this is literally what printing money is in the real world. It's like we create a fake job that needs done. Or, you know, it may not be fake, but it's like, well, no one really asked for it, but the government decides, no, you need it, right? You all need to have insulation in your roofs, or you all need to have new school halls. Oh, and guess what? Here's the money, right? Where do we get it? Well, yeah. We just pull it out of our, you know, figure of speech somewhere.
And the thing is that actually it's a debt to a bank, because to private banks in the form of bonds, government bonds, and these debts are heaped onto the next generations. And not only that, you also get the lovely byproduct of inflation, which we all know about nowadays, especially in the libertarian circles. The inflation starts to rob the middle class, and especially the retiring class, because it takes around about 5 years to sort of kick in from any sort of new stimulus. When I say stimulus, I say that very broadly. But from these packages, and then within 5 years, you start seeing things going up in prices. And you know, another stimulus package we had was this first homeowner's grant. We had
That was incredible, wasn't it? Yeah,
I mean, it was incredible, because actually what happened was they were giving $20,000,
yeah,
something like that, to new home buyers. So these kids coming straight out of college would get these extraordinary loans of massive. I mean, housing prices in Australia on average $500,000, so $500,000 upwards for pretty basic setup, and the only thing that really did was drive every house up by $20,000.
Sure.
And so you had, and then you have all these kids stuck with these huge massive mortgages. They're totally stressed out. They can't leave their work. They stab each other in the back at work because they just don't want to get fired because they've got this huge mortgage on their hands.
Sure.
And it turns into this crazy. Anyway, this whole stimulus.
The concept of government spending is also coupled now with this new real twist on government intervention in the form of carbon taxes. Because what is a carbon tax? Well, it's another form of government intervention, isn't it? It's another way the government intervenes with a normal free market economy, but it's a little bit different. And with the carbon tax, what they said is, well, we're going to force businesses to buy these things called permits, right? What is a permit? Well, it has no value. It's just we've created it out of nothing, and you're going to have to pay for these permits because you produce so-called pollution, which we've defined as carbon dioxide, right? It's all just fantasy, right? It's a creation of the minds of bureaucrats. But then in order to soften the blow, because indeed the businesses said, well, we're just going to pass the costs on to our customers anyway, ha ha ha, right? So then the government, in order to soften the blow, said to the average battler, guess what? We're giving you a tax cut, right? And so along with all of these rises in energy costs, there were these tax cuts that were offered to lower income earners. But now here comes the real twist of the knife, folks, where you should actually be wanting to actually get your knife out or your hatchet or your machete and go down to Canberra, because she's now saying, and this was in the press conference 2 days ago, she says we're going to have to reduce our tax cuts. In other words, we're going to cut back on the tax cuts. In other words, what she promised you a couple of years ago might end up not being continued with.
Of course not.
So, indeed, you can see that it's a giant loop there, isn't it? I mean, it's obvious.
It's a distortion.
We're just going to break you with Truth News Radio Australia. Do stay with us. Really interesting discussion.
man to man is so unjust. Children, you don't know who to trust. Your worst enemy could be your best friend, and your best friend your worst enemy.
Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. And you can find us on the internet at truthnews.com.au and check us out. Get our podcasts, download them to your smartphone, and there's quite a lot in there. I did a really interesting interview last week with Malcolm Roberts, leader of the Galileo movement and an active, very, very passionate campaigner on science and reason, and particularly in terms of climate science. And he's done incredible work there. And I've just been talking there in the last segment a bit about the carbon tax. Now, Josh, what do you think about this? What's your take on this? The carbon tax, it's not spending, is it? It's something different. What do we call it?
Theft.
Just call it theft.
You know, I mean, it's really – the thing is that they sell – when you – Yeah, I mean, it goes – actually, what this whole deal is a soft launch into a carbon trading scheme. But
yeah.
Actually, for the government, it's just better not to launch a carbon trading scheme. They'd just rather tax it. Because
bear in mind, if I may just interject, the price of carbon in Europe has dropped down to about $2 or something, $2 or $3. So the projected price was going to be 16 to 20, and that was projected income for the government over the next few years. Well, that's gone. Anyway, please continue.
Yeah, because usually how a market works is you have some money or something, corn or anything, something of value, and someone else has something of value. Now, you want what they have a little bit more than what you have, and they want what you have a little bit more than they have, if that makes sense. And then you trade. So you know, as if I want a beer at the pub, I want that beer a little bit more than I want the money in my wallet, and the guy behind the bar wants my money more than he wants the beer that he's got.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. Everything can be explained with beer.
So
the trouble with carbon, selling carbon, is that no one really wants it.
Yeah.
At the start, of course, once the licenses are given out, you want it because you need to spew out some carbon.
Sure.
That's when you do want it. So that's the demand. But here's the clincher of the market is how many licenses are printed. And therein lies the actual price. So it's not actually a market, because if you have a market, it is a market, but it's a very artificial market. It's kind of like it's the same with the currency of the American dollar, the Australian dollar. They set the market by the interest rate. So they set the market by saying how much it is to loan money. And so the price isn't really being determined by the market. It's being determined by the amount that they're printing. And that's the same with these carbon permits. So to say that it's a free market is definitely a lie.
Well, you know, I heard in Europe,
there's no beating around the bush.
I heard in Europe, Josh, that that they were saying they were going to restrict the supply of permits to drive up the price.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make it, like, it messes with your head. You can't figure it out, can you?
Well, it's very simple. It's basically theft, and it's not solving anything. If you think that carbon is a big problem, which a lot of people do, and it's fair enough because they've been told that for the last 20 years they've been told that, people. So I don't blame them, because what are you meant to believe after 20 years of getting
absolutely
a hand
absolutely
down your throat and you're just too busy with a mortgage and all this stuff, right? So they believe it. If they do, then what about everything else? What about depleted uranium being slammed around everywhere? What about overfishing? What about What about, are we going to have a tax on that? Are we, what about all the plastic everywhere? Are we going to tax that? What about, I mean, where does the taxing stop on bad things? Where does it stop?
It's basically just part of this cancer of statism, isn't it? I mean, it really is a runaway kind of disease of government corporatist structures thinking they can just, it's like the Emperor's New Clothes syndrome. They just think they can create everything. They think they own the universe.
Yeah, they control it all. And you know, I really find it quite interesting living now in Berlin here, because sure. I always thought that Berlin was very very controlled and stuff. But seeing being over here, you know, like no one wears a helmet because it's not illegal to wear a helmet. I mean, it's not illegal not to wear a helmet. Like in Australia, you have to wear a helmet, and people ride here around without a helmet. And it's sort of just, these are just little things, and that sounds silly, but
oh yeah, but it makes all the difference, doesn't really, it? Yeah,
yeah. I mean, really, to just get on your bike and ride somewhere without some, and I've been pulled over in Australia for not wearing a helmet and fined like $80 or something like that, right? But then there's also the whole intenseness around alcohol.
Oh yeah,
I mean it's insane. Here you go anywhere and buy you know, at the train station you buy a beer.
Yeah,
at the McDonald's you can buy a beer just anywhere. I mean at the local in the supermarket stocked it.
Are there any restrictions, Josh, in Germany about what time of day you can buy alcohol? Like in these shops that all sell alcohol, can you buy them at any time of day as well?
Oh yeah, any time of day.
Sure,
and you can walk around with a bottle in your hand, which is kind of strange. I'm not used to it. You know, I walk around and there's a person with a bottle in his hand walking just, but no one's, I mean, you know, you get the odd violent freak. But I got to admit, when I go walking in Sydney at night in the city, it's a nightmare.
Oh yeah.
People are so unruly. They're violent. They're scary. It's quite frightening walking around there. Because
it seems to create,
It seems to create this sort of, oh, got to get drunk. And over here, it's kind of like, well, if you want a beer, you have a beer. And you see workers and, at lunchtime grab a beer and with a sandwich from the sandwich shop. I mean, it's not seen as this thing to really hammer down. And because it's something to enjoy and just have a sip of beer. And so, you know, I mean, and I'm not saying there's no such thing as alcohol. It definitely is, but just this control mechanism really makes me see that when you're in a country where you're sort of swimming in the culture, you don't seem to realize how the control grid's growing around you. I mean, you spend a little time in Asia.
Indeed.
And people say, "Oh, we're living in a free country. Go to Asia, see how free they are." They literally just set up a shop anywhere they want.
Yeah, it seems that, well, it's good to know that Germany doesn't seem to have this runaway statist cancer that Australia has.
It definitely, it does as well, but it's certain.
It hasn't.
That you see that are different. It's like, oh.
It seems to affect
normal.
Europe. It certainly affects Europe in different ways. It's obviously very prevalent in Europe, but I think in Australia we're kind of like a pressure cooker. We just have it. It's a very concentrated form, and because we're a small population, it seems to accentuate some of the worst aspects of that. It's sort of counterintuitive. A lot of people think Australia is going to be this great place when they think about Australia from overseas and think, oh, where would I go if the world got really bad? I'd go to Australia. Have you heard many people say that?
Yeah.
And it's such a mistake, isn't it? Because actually, no, Australia will be one of the worst places to go. I mean, look, it's great in a lot of ways. We do have a lot of open land and we have wilderness and great. You know, if you want to go off and just take your chances in the bush, good. But, you know, in terms of a society, it's not going to be too good, is it? I mean, Stefan Molyneux has been predicting some sort of collapse in Australia. I didn't actually get through the entire clip there of what he was projecting, but it seems like he was saying, you know, things are going to get bad and worse. Maybe we're going to have scenarios in Australia that match what we've seen in Cyprus and other parts of Europe. And what do you think?
Well, the thing is, Cyprus is a very unique situation. And actually, funnily enough, They're kind of in a better situation than America and countries like Australia, because if you take your money, if you can manage to take your money out of the bank in Cyprus, you can store it under the mattress, and at least there's not going to be super mammoth inflation. The reason I'm saying that is because that Cyprus doesn't have the ability just to print money, and that's why they're taking it physically. In America, it's very unpopular just to close the banks and take it physically, so they just print it. And so even if you have the money under the mattress, it'll get hyperinflated away, so they can steal it even if it's under your mattress.
We're just going to break here with Truth News Radio. It's great to have your company today. Do stay with us. We'll be back for another segment. Don't go away. Welcome back here with Truth News Radio. I've got Josh Jackson on the line, and we are talking, have been talking about the economy, about Australia, about statism, about various ways in which the society can be run. But I want to actually switch now to another topic. Josh, we were talking earlier off mic about the Boston Marathon bombing there, and you made some observations about how the conspiracies have certainly run rampant with that, and I've certainly noticed it. And very, very similar pattern to what happened after the Sandy Hook shooting. And believe me, I have certainly have my questions and my doubts about everything that we hear in the media, but I also have a healthy degree of skepticism about a lot of the stuff that floats around on YouTube. What's your take on it all, Josh?
Well, you know, the thing is that we both put in a good 10 years of work and hard work trying to discover the truth and let other people know the truth behind the research of the 9th September 11th attacks, which was vast and very well researched. And very amazing names behind the research. Now, what I find is that all these videos that are starting to come out about crisis actors and all this stuff, which is complete and utter FUD.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, and it's quite sickening because, look, let's put it this way. Why, you know, if you're the state, why the heck? And I'm not saying it's not an inside job. I don't know because it really... there's a lot of aspects to it, but I'm just talking about things like the crisis actors and all these sort of things.
Yeah, and there were claims after Sandy Hook that some of the witnesses interviewed were crisis actors as well. And I looked into a lot of that, and I couldn't say that they weren't. But I mean, again, a lot of this is innuendo, isn't it? It puts a suggestion in your mind, and then it's like you've got to watch all these YouTube videos with some guy going, "Oh yeah, it's for sure. I really know, definitely." And you sort of it's all just drivel, isn't it?
Yeah. And look, if you're the state, just let off a bomb. You don't need to set up this elaborate fake people with fake legs and limbs hanging off and fake. I mean, they just set off a real bomb and blow some people up. I mean, do you think they really give that much of a hoot that they want to set up, you know, this elaborate actors guild of fake people that they have to treat? I mean, it's just.
Absolutely.
It's just. It just makes and now all the 9/11 stuff, all that hard work is thrown together by the media with all of these sort of crazy over the top innuendo and quite sick theories which really have no basis in reality, and like you said, it's kind of these people that just get off on connecting dots that are so obvious. I mean, I saw one today of some woman that was lying on the ground helping some poor chap that had his legs blown off, saying, "Oh, look, in this picture, he's got not much meat on his bone, and in this picture, he's got some meat hanging off his bone."
Yeah, like, that proves what? Like, the whole thing was faked. But then again, some people find that fascinating. And be careful about criticizing people for that, because when you do, they're likely to turn on you straight away and claim that you are suppressing them and that you are some kind of shill suppressing their natural need to find out what's going on. So it's very hard to deal with this.
Yeah, and look, I mean, I'm all for free speech. You can say what you want. You can say that that space aliens planted the bomb. Quite frankly, I don't care. But I'm allowed to have my view as well, just like they are. And my view is really it has always been to try to look at science and evidence as well as trying to listen to as many things as possible and collate and then come to a conclusion or as close to a conclusion as possible.
Absolutely, Josh. I think we're going to have to leave it for there. Your connection is really dropping out a bit. I'd love to get you back on the show when we've got a better line. Thanks a lot for coming on today.
No worries. Take it easy.
Now, I'd just like to counterbalance what we were saying there by looking at the way in which the right-wing media in the US has in fact used the Marathon bombing to bring in all kinds of outrageous and quite offensive calls for a rolling back of rights and intrusions on freedoms and torturing people. And I want to do that by way of playing you a clip from the Daily Show's Jon Stewart, where he basically sends up a number of these television channels. And he really highlights the hypocrisy of these talk show hosts who spend a lot of time talking about the Constitution when it suits them. But then there's this kind of flip side. It's the conservative flip side that becomes ridiculous and becomes a supporter of fascism and totalitarianism when it comes to dealing with terrorism. We saw it, of course, in the wake of 9/11. And here we have talk show hosts calling for people to be tortured, who were previously talking about how we had to uphold the Constitution. Anyway, over to Jon Stewart from The Daily Show.
Hey, the Constitution founded our great country. The American Constitution, the blueprints for our way of life.
I really worry if we have lost an understanding of our Constitution, our founding principles, an understanding of what makes us strong.
They hate our freedom. They hate our way of life. They hate who we are. They hate our liberty.
It is like we are the Anne Hathaway of countries. You hate us, but only because you can't get with this. Why do you hate America? Is it that we're too nice, that we sing too well, or that we're too hot?
I dreamed a dream. All right.
And that's why how we handle Boston Marathon bombing suspect Dzhokhar Tsarnaev is so important. For the strength of our system lies in how durable it is, even for our most heinous citizens.
I'm a little bit concerned because now he's got his Miranda rights, the right to remain silent.
Miranda. Mirandize the guy or not?
I don't understand the point.
First thing we're going to tell him is you have the right to remain silent. Fantastic. So the bombs that could be exploding and the pots that could be unfolding, we can't ask him.
Okay, first of all, not reading someone their Miranda rights doesn't mean they don't have their Miranda rights. You have Miranda rights under the Constitution. You don't have to say them out loud for them to become real. You're thinking Beetlejuice. Now, the only reason you have to read them is so that whatever the suspect has done or did, whatever they do say, is admissible at their trial. It's another hallmark of our constitutionally guaranteed right to due process.
I think it's a mistake not to treat him as an enemy combatant.
We ought to look at him as an enemy combatant and moving him toward a military tribunal.
Yes, a civilian trial for terrorists, not going to work. That's why Tim McVeigh, Ted Kaczynski, Ramzi Yosef, and the Blind Sheik roam our fair country in a bus, going city to city, singing medleys of original hits, and... What's that?
Really? The dead are in prison, huh?
Well, who am I thinking of? Is it... Oh, the Muppets. Oh, all right. I get it. Well, to be fair, they both tried to take Manhattan. So in the wake of an assault on our freedom and way of life, We have quickly jettisoned the Sixth Amendment right to a fair trial and speedy trial and the Fifth Amendment's right against self-incrimination. What's next?
This guy ought to be, right now, being interrogated in a very intense way. I'd waterboard him. I don't believe enhanced interrogation is torture. I don't.
You don't believe enhanced interrogation is torture? Because torture, like Tinkerbell, depends on if we believe? So there goes the Eighth Amendment's ban on cruel and unusual punishment. Any freedom lovers want to take a crack at some of the lower ones, your thirds, your fourths?
Should the FBI be allowed to now go into mosques and wiretap and surveil? I think this is a great case for opening up surveillance.
I think that we should be able to put in listening devices in there.
Sure, illegal search and seizure, done! The freedom lovers at Fox are jettisoning amendments like Han Solo dumping cargo to make the jump to light speed at the first sign of Imperial cruisers, right, Chewie? But you know what? Anybody can toss away the lesser-known amendments. Only a true patriot can set a course straight for the first.
We really have to consider, given the fact so many people hate us, that we're going to have to cut off Muslim students from coming to this country for some period of time.
Yes, a religious litmus test for school enrollment, says Fox's most prominent liberal voice. Holy what's left? A prohibition on the unmentioned personal rights in the Constitution that are designated to the people?
I want to know about this wife as well. I don't care if she knew about this. She ought to be in prison for wearing a hijab.
And down goes the Ninth Amendment! Down goes the Ninth Amendment! Ann Coulter doesn't just want a police state. She wants a fashion police state.
Well, there we have it. I'm not a huge fan of Jon Stewart in his general rants, but he can be very amusing, and he certainly has highlighted there the outrageous hypocrisy of the right-wing media. But of course, you know, see, I'm not a supporter of either right-wing or left-wing views in media, or generally in politics. Basically, I'm only really interested in facts. I'm interested in discussions about economic systems and discussions about what would be the best type of economic system. But in terms of taking a position, this seems to be what the media cartels are set up to do, to mold public opinion. It's that old building of consensus by giving you a spectrum. And we have the left-wing media and the right-wing media giving you a different angles, but never too far away from the midpoint, and quite often swapping so that one will take one side, so that the conservative media will uphold the Constitution of the United States when it comes to, say, gun rights, but they're quite happy to trash it when it comes to personal freedoms. Anyway, that's the show for this week. I hope you've enjoyed it. There will be no hour two of today's show, but we will be bringing you a recent interview. I'll be replaying the interview with Malcolm Roberts from last week, a really, really important interview. So do stay with us for hour two, and I will be back next week. See you then.